Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTDHD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have two interviews for you today. The first is going to be with Jack Rose, a good friend to the morning show who has been with us on any number of occasions. He is with the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. In part two of today's program, we're going to be introducing you to a very talented young pianist from Carthage College who will be performing tomorrow night with the Carthage Philharmonic Orchestra. And her teacher, Dr. Wael Farouk, will be with us as well. Again, that's part two of today's program. But for part one, we are going to be observing National Mental Health Awareness Month by speaking with Jack Rose, who's joined us any number of occasions. Jack is co-president of NAMI Kenosha County, and there are a number of things going on that we want to talk about, including a vigil this Wednesday, the 17th, titled Into Mental Health, Inspired, Informed, Involved. Jack Rose, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you very much, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
I know a lot of our listeners have heard your story before, but for the sake of anybody who is listening that does not maybe understand kind of the backstory, I wonder if you would just briefly explain why the issue of mental health and mental illness is a very important one to you, a very personal issue for you.
I'd be glad to, Greg. We have two adult children now. Our daughter is 45. Our son is 41. And when our daughter was 16, she was in a mental health hospital in Virginia. We were still in the Navy at the time. And so that was when she celebrated her 16th birthday, in fact. And then our son had a breakdown when he was 24, shortly after graduating from University of Wisconsin. And so I give you the dates. Our daughter's date, that goes back to 1986. Our son's date, 1999. And so here we are, 2017. We've been on this journey of diagnosis, misdiagnosis, meds, the whole list of points on the journey. And so here we are, 2017. Our daughter is the director of integral yoga at the Sashtanadi Ashram. And people can check it out, yogaville.org in Buckingham, Virginia. Our son is happily married. He has spent 10 years with Hirshhorn Zuckerman Design Group, headquartered Rockville, Maryland. And to this day, he lives with depression, and he has had a great life, a beautiful wife, a beautiful daughter. And so we're very grateful for that because it has been a long journey, but we feel like we are blessed.
Right. It's in so many respects a heartwarming success story in terms of them emerging on the other side. Not that these issues are entirely left behind them. That's a reality with which they still have to live, but have managed to achieve so much and come to terms with it in a way that's truly gratifying. At what point in that journey did it become clear to you that you needed to become involved not just in the lives of your own children and their struggles with mental illness, but on this wider stage as part of the local chapter of NAMI? how quickly did that occur, and what prompted you more than anything to take all of this on in the way that you have?
Well, I think a big turning point actually was 1999 when our daughter was married. Our son had his breakdown, and up until that point, we knew nothing of NAMI. And so at that time, we found out more about it. We were in Kenosha at the time. Both my wife and I got involved at various stages of the organization. We had a dear couple, Dick and Dee Gunther, who really were kind of our safety net when we moved back to Kenosha. And Dick and Dee are still active in NAMI Kenosha. But that was kind of the point, right around 2000. And so from there, we have gone forward, and it's not just a journey for Sue and I. I think we have just a fantastic team at NAMI Kenosha County. I mean, it's an all-volunteer outfit. NAMI Kenosha County has been in existence since 1983. And here, as we move forward, the community has been very generous with donations. Different organizations, Mary Frost Ashley Community Trust has been, Charitable Trust, has been very, very helpful. So that allows us to be where we are now. We have a great board of directors, and we put on events that we can probably get into today, some of the different programs, and we charge nothing to the community, nothing. Mm-hmm. And we feel that strongly about it. And I think the collaborative effort that NAMI Kenosha has established with Gateway Technical College here in the Kenosha campus, I mean, that really has been extremely, extremely supportive.
So explain the three areas of focus which to which NAMI, and particularly NAMI on the local level, NAMI Kenosha County, focuses its efforts. There are really three branches, and they're all important.
Right. You know, it's the tripod is education, support, and advocacy. And I think we, starting with the education side, we have been fortunate to have our family-to-family program. Family-to-family program is a 12-week program for family and friends of those living with a mental illness. And we just now completed our two most recent classes, and we have one class that here at the Job Center and another one that we have out at the County Center building. And the one here at the Job Center probably finished about 25 people. The one in the county, we had 10. And so it helps us to continue to move towards the western part of our county. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's so important. And again, Kenosha County has been very supportive in providing conference rooms where we hold these sessions. We also have our crisis intervention team training program for law enforcement. This is a five-day class held right here at the Kenosha campus of Gateway. To date, we've had 194 officers go through this, and really support from the chief of police, from Sheriff Beth, and it's just been a very positive thing. We have another class, in fact, starting this Monday, 15th through the 19th. Right now, it looks like we have 22 officers, deputies in the class, and we are also including more of the jail staff, and we think that this is going to help. With that CIT training, we also have Crisis Intervention Partner. This is the two-day training. Very, very similar, only it's more compressed. This is for the next level of people that deal with folks in mental health crisis. So this is the dispatcher. This is the jail staff. This is the social worker. This is the teacher. This is mom and dad. And so to date, we've had 694 go through that class. We have another class coming November 20th and 21st. The Ending the Silence program, this is incredible. Lisa Zanin, our co-president, she has set up just a fantastic program where we go out to the high schools right now. And I think over the last couple of school years, we've touched over 1,800 students and staff in high schools. And it's a program where you go out and you talk about NAMI, you talk about mental illness, and you have a person that lives with mental illness give their story. And this has been extremely effective in the school system. So we've got this circle of care we're developing, and just this year we started a mental health portion of the in-service, the 12-day in-service at our jail system. So we go out there next Tuesday. We'll be coming up on our 12th session. So, again, that circle of care that's out there. So these are the important educational things. We also do a walkabout rewards. And what this is, it's a session where people begin walking, 30 walking sessions. You get a certificate. You go out to Rogan's. Chuck Gustafson, who's the manager, fits each and every one of the individuals that come in there with the proper shoes and gives us a good price. NAMI pays for them, and we've had over 105 participants in that. And another key piece, and it's educational and it's overall wellness, but we've worked out a program with the YMCA. And NAMI, YMCA, and we've been doing it probably about 3 years now, but we go out and people are on a list to go out and use the services at the Y. Started very small. It's grown to over 284 participants now. So it's a neat part of recovery because it gives them more independence. It's right on a bus line. You can go out there, you sign in, and then NAMI Kenosha buys two large group passes. So that's the education piece. Support, we continue to do. Second and fourth Thursday of every month, we rent space out at St. Paul's Lutheran Church on 39th Avenue and 88th Street. And we have three different support groups. We have one for adults living with mental illness. We have another one for family and friends. And we also have one for adolescents. And so this is really key. And just recently now we have Kate Bullard from Rogers, who is our facilitator for our adolescent group, who is a licensed practitioner that really gives us, you know, the whole piece there. We're trying to get a support session going out at the jobs or out at the county building, and that may hopefully we may be able to start something like that in the fall. And so that's key in advocacy. We continue to do things we're doing right now. And we approach our local legislators, our state legislators, our federal legislators, and try to ensure that we get the proper legislation with respect to mental illness. And I know right now it's just a very difficult time with the American CARE Act that's being proposed and the impact on Medicaid. And Medicaid has been the funding stream, the lifeblood of many of the programs that we need right here in Kenosha County to make
it
work.
Give an example of local programs that depend on funding through Medicaid. What would be one or two examples of that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. A recent development here over probably the last 3 years now, I guess, and that is our Comprehensive Community Services. And this is a recovery program that comes under Kenosha Human Development Services. Great program. It goes kind of hand in glove with the community support program. But here recently with the regionalization of comprehensive community services, Racine and Kenosha have come together. The funding is provided by Medicaid. And right now this program, this comprehensive community services, allows us to provide treatment for children in our community. And this has been a godsend. I mean, the sooner we can begin helping people, the better off we are. And this comprehensive community services has also been help to our treatment court. We have a specialty court here that in 2017 we combined a behavioral treatment court and a drug and alcohol court into one court. Judge Milosaskis sits at bench now, and soon Judge Jody Meyer will take that, will sit the bench for the treatment court. But here, too, with people that need treatment, we're working more to get comprehensive community services help in offsetting that cost. And if you look, figure about $100, and these are rough numbers, but if you have a person with a mental illness in jail, anybody in jail, $75. If you have a person that's in a specialty court, treatment court, that's about $15 a day. If you get a person in a diversion program even before they get into the judicial system, it's about $10. So we have all those programs. We're working on it. And at the end of the day, it provides treatment and it saves taxpayers some money.
We're speaking with Jack Rose, who is with the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. The month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's a perfect opportunity to be thinking about mental health and when our mental health is compromised by mental illness of one kind or another. Before we're done, we'll remind you about Mental Health Awareness Vigil that is coming up this Wednesday, the 17th of May, late in the afternoon. Jack, I want to make sure we spend a couple of minutes probing a little deeper into this crisis intervention team training. You mentioned that the newest session of that training is going to be taking place this week right here at Gateway, and that nearly 200 people have already completed this program. It's quite intriguing, and I wonder if you could just say a word about the kind of training that occurs there. Okay.
Sure, I'd be more than happy to. This is an evidence-based program that was really started with NAMI Memphis and the Memphis Police Department back in the mid-'80s, and it's set up to provide a better toolkit for law enforcement in dealing with people in mental health crisis. And it's a five-day program, and we bring in what we feel is one of the best psychiatrists in the state, a Dr. David Mays, who gives nearly a full-day session leading off. And then on Friday, we have a Dr. Eileen Abrams comes in who talks about the crisis process, talks about the de-escalation techniques. And this really culminates in the role play sessions that we do on Friday. So interspersed in there between the Monday and the Friday, we have developmental disability and autism. Susie Wolf comes in from KAC and discusses that. We talk about the different child and adolescent programs and elder issues in Kenosha. Another piece deals with NGI and probation and parole, and it's a all-encompassing five-day session, fire hose, a lot of information. One of the things that we do on Wednesday is we go out and we take the law enforcement officers and we visit some of the different sites in Kenosha that many of these officers may not have been aware of, and we go to the care center, the Kenosha Adult Residential Emergency. We go to the Bridges Community Center. We go to Kenosha Human Development Services. And this year we're going to be going to Shelter Care, which is a program under kids for adolescents.
And so the point of that is so they know where to bring people, to refer people, or?
Refer people, and, you know, in Kenosha, 262-657-7188, that gets you into this network,
right,
of Kenosha Human Development Services, and that is the starting point. And so it gives law enforcement a little bit better idea of the resources that we provide here in the community. Another key thing that we do, and this is on Wednesday afternoon, we have one of our In Our Own Voice presenters who comes in, and Adalia is our curtain coordinator, does a fantastic job. One of the key members of our board. And so she tells her story, and she tells her story of living with schizophrenia and living with mental illness and voices. And so right after that, we have questions that and you move right in, and we do our voices demonstration. And here you take an MP3 player, which has about a 42-minute representation of what it's like to live with voices. You plug all the officers in, and you let them experience that. And while they are doing that, you give them an application and say, fill this out. And then give them some basic fourth grade questions, geography, math. Have them do a puzzle. And it's just incredible to see the reaction on some of these officers. And it really has been very effective. We are using the same voices demonstration out at the detention center now in our in-service that we're providing to the jail staff. So that is extremely, extremely effective. And then again, on that last day, you know, we lead into that Eileen Abrams, who's a psychologist at the prison system in Milwaukee. But she talks about trauma in children. And she talks birth right on through 18. And it's just incredible to see how some of these children, the environment that they grow up in. And many times, mental illness is a brain disorder, okay, flat out. It's a disease, and it has to do with the disease of the brain. It's passed on in genes, but many times it is brought out by an environmental thing. Stress, how you live, people coming back from war, the post-traumatic, PTSD. And it's just interesting to see when you have a child growing up in a dysfunctional family, guns, violence, domestic abuse, and then you wonder why as they go into school they have a behavior like this. That's all they've known.
Right.
So anyhow, Eileen does just a fantastic, fantastic job on that. And then the last day, of course, are the role plays, and this is where we put a pair of officers in a situation that replicates answering a call. Or this year we're going to have a cell scenario where the jail staff will deal with somebody incarcerated who may be having a crisis breakdown. But it's interesting here at Gateway now, you all have purchased a house. So we do our role plays in the house right at the south side of the campus.
Okay.
So it's a very real thing. And they go in, they have a situation, they handle it, they use some of the techniques that Eileen has provided earlier in the training. And then right after that, the officers are critiqued, what they did right, what they did wrong. And it's a very eye-opening experience.
I suppose two things could happen in this kind of training. First of all, one can imagine and certainly hopes that the vast majority of people involved in law enforcement are in the core of their being compassionate people who want to help people. And I think that's usually why most people go into that line of work. But who may lack experience when it comes to dealing with people with mental illness,
right,
and what's going to be triggers that makes it worse versus making it better and so on. But this probably also serves, I should think, for at least a small number of law enforcement folks as maybe what we think of as sometimes kind of sensitivity training, that their inclination might be to just see somebody behaving oddly as someone who's just weird or an oddball,
right,
or whatever.
Right, right.
And this, you know, maybe heightens the awareness and sensitivity of some people that, in fact, what they're probably looking at is somebody contending with mental illness, and they are behaving in the way that they are through absolutely no fault of their own.
Exactly. And that's an excellent point, because all along we have been, we still are, but we continually fight the stigma associated with mental illness. So another key piece of this training prior to the role play is Brenda Wesley comes down from NAMI Greater Milwaukee, and she's the outreach coordinator, does great work, great work. And so she has a whole segment on stigma and how to counteract it. And just, again, it gives the officers a better toolkit when they're placed in these situations. Because the thing that's extremely important couple things. People with mental illness are usually the victims. Two, people with mental illness are generally very intelligent. And so if you, as an officer, do something, say something, you really need to back up your words and don't just get into the dialogue with them. If you're going to do something, then do it. Because they will remember that. And they will remember what you did or did not do after making your statement.
Interesting.
And so it's important.
Who undergoes this training? Is this something that people volunteer to undergo, or is it more of a directed thing from above?
No, it's right now the basis of the program that started is a voluntary program. And I personally think we get the better results from doing that. And I think with the reputation that we have here in Kenosha County, and, you know, with the training that's received, many people say it's the best training they've received, whatever. But we have people that continue to volunteer to do this. And it really makes a big difference because there are examples of cities where make it mandatory right here in our state.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting the individuals in that, they really don't want to be there. And so that takes away, I think, from the training, from the atmosphere that you try to create in the classroom. And, I mean, you, as a professor, you know, you look for that. You look for that dialogue. You look for that engagement. If you don't have that, or if you got somebody kicked back,
right,
it's not going to work. So it's just, I don't know, volunteer.
Makes sense.
It
makes sense. One would hope and that some of those people not inclined to undergo this training, who perhaps need it the most, will, as they hear through the grapevine about other officers who have done this and feel good about it, that at some point they will maybe realize this is something that might be valuable for me too.
Right, and we have examples of people that, just what you're talking about, were maybe more senior, and I don't really need that. And they go, and they come out of that a different officer.
And they're glad that they did.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, again, that training, the latest session of that is going to be going on this week and right here at Gateway Technical College. And I'm proud to say that Gateway has been a good partner to NAMI of Kenosha County.
Fantastic.
That's so great to hear. Really, really great to hear. Could you say a quick word? We're just about out of time, and I also want to give you time to just remind people about the vigil. But can you say just a quick word about this thing that NAMI Kenosha supports called the Oxford House?
Yes. Great program. Jane Davis has really brought Oxford House to Kenosha. And it's a recovery house, and it started with Oxford House Heirs, and this was in November of 2010, and it's for men. That's 7 beds. Another one, Oxford House Lena, where Jane really got involved. That has beds for 9, and that's for women. And then we have Oxford House Jerry C., which started in 2016, just last year, and that's a 5-bed facility for men. And what it is, it's a recovery house. The people create their own organization. You have a president and a vice president and somebody that does the maintenance, and you have officers. You have a weekly meeting. You have UAs. You drop. You're dirty. You're out. And so it has been a great resource for our community. It's also been a great resource for our specialty court. Because many times they need housing. You need to have housing, but also you need the structure that Oxford House. So it's a great program. Jane Davis has done a marvelous job, and there's also an Oxford House in Racine, and Jane is a coordinator for the whole region.
Very good. So let's finish out by reminding people of this vigil that's coming up on Wednesday, the 17th of May, with sort of a pre-reception at 5, and then the vigil itself at Civic Center Park. That begins at 6. I know you're going to welcome everybody. Right. Real quick, tell our listeners about some of the things that will happen during this vigil.
Yes, we'll have a proclamation by the county exec of with respect to the vigil. We will make award presentations. We have the David Wagner Mental Health Advocacy Award, which this year will go to Lisa Hain from Kenosha Human Development Services. We have the Community Service Award, which will go to Jane Davis. And then we have the Exceptional Volunteer Award, which will go to Janet DeLeo of NAMI Kenosha. And after that, we'll have a reading. And this year, our featured speaker is going to be Caitlin Ray.
Miss
Kenosha 2017. And Caitlin's platform has been mental health advocacy. She's just a real strong advocate in the field of mental health. And she's also been accepted, and she will start the Marquette University master's nursing program this fall. And she is just now taking her finals at University of Parkside. And so it's a neat event, and I hope people can come out and join us. It looks like the weather is going to be good. I would like to say, too, that please, if you have any questions about NAMI Kenosha County, check our website. And that is namikenosha.org. At this past NAMI Wisconsin convention, Chris Cohn, who is our webmaster and just does a fantastic job, she was awarded the a Volunteer of the Year for NAMI Wisconsin. And she does a great job, and it's a boatload of information. And again, it's namikenosha.org.
It is a good website, and it helps to underscore all the good things that NAMI Kenosha County does. Jack Rose, the co-president. Jack, it's always great to talk with you. Thank you for all the good work that you are doing on behalf of this really, really important issue, and we look forward to having you back on the morning show many times in the future.
Thank you very much, Greg.
You bet. Part two of today's morning show is coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. We're going to introduce you to a dazzlingly talented young pianist who will be performing tomorrow night with Carthage's Philharmonic Orchestra. Stay with us. This is the morning show on WGTD. The time is 8:43. And now for part two of today's morning show here on WGTD, and we're going to begin this portion by having you listen to some really, really fine piano playing by our guest who's joining us now for part two of today's program. Give a listen to this. That is the playing of one of the fine young piano students that we have at Carthage College right now. Her name is Shitsi Shu, and she has just begun her studies at Carthage College, and we have her in our studios along with her very proud teacher, Professor Wael Farouk, who is a brand new addition to Carthage's music faculty. And Professor Farouk has been on the morning show on a couple of different occasions to talk about his marvelous Brahms project and all of those performances. But this is actually the first time he is in our studios, and this is Shitsi Shu's first visit as well. We welcome both of you to the morning show. So glad you're here. Good to have you here. So, Dr. Farouk, say a word about the young lady sitting next to you and her talent, and what it's been like to work with her thus far.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting us. We are really honored to be here. She is one of those students that every teacher hopes to have, and I'm proud enough and lucky enough to have her. She is a marvelous, marvelous talent, and not only that, she's extremely hard worker, which is more important even than being talented, and she is extremely intelligent as well. So she touches up on all the overtones of recommendations, comments, and she made sure that she, you know, works really hard and to deliver her best all the time. As you mentioned, that's her very first year here at Carthage and in the States, and she won the concerto competition with the Chopin Second Concerto, which she's performing tomorrow, and she plays for the opera workshop, which you excellently produce and direct, and she played for the Drood, the Mystery of Edwin Drood, the musical, and plus working on a sizable repertoire every single semester, so she is a wonderful addition to the piano program at Carthage, and we're lucky to have her and all of other wonderful Chinese students.
Very good. So I'm going to ask you some questions that I don't know the answer to, and that's sometimes you ask questions and you already know what people are going to say, but I really don't know exactly where you come from in China. Tell us about the place that you grew up in China.
I came from the east western of China, and it's like the same weather like here.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you know what snow is already.
Yeah, I know. There are lots of snow there, too. But it's not like so windy like here.
Mm. We have a lot of wind, that's for sure. So did you grow up in a relatively small community, small town, or were you in a big city?
No, it's like the most important city in the province.
Hmm. And did you grow up in a family where there was lots of music? I mean, for instance, with parents who were musical or brothers and sisters who were musical?
No. In my family, only me is majoring in music.
Ah. When did you begin becoming interested in the piano? How old were you?
It was 7 years old.
Hmm.
And my mom liked me to study the piano, and she recommended me to study the piano.
So it was her idea, not your idea?
At first, it's her idea, but after like 1 week, I like it.
Ah, very good. And At what point in your life did you become really serious, or did you right away did you become really serious thinking, I want to do this, I want to work hard on this?
It's before 4 years, I think I will be majored in music, but like before 1 year, I perfectly make sure that I want to.
Yeah, to work really, really hard. So tell us about your decision to come all the way to America to study music at Carthage College. First of all, did you already think, I want to go away and study? How did this idea even come to you?
At first, I want to do my college life in China, but my professor in China who teaches me to study piano is the student of Manhattan.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So he thinks America is a good place to study music and to get more music literature or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think he said it very well.
Yeah.
It's a good choice to do it. So.
Right. So how did you find out about Carthage all the way over in China?
It's from my professor.
So he knew about us?
Yeah. He thinks the environment in Carthage is very well. It has a quiet study environment to like make us to practice well, study well. And he thinks the professor here is very good too.
Hmm. So has it been hard to adjust? I mean, have you been homesick for China, or not too bad?
I think so, but it's not that bad. It's okay for me to be comfortable, and because the professors and friends in Carthage College is very patient enough for me, so I feel more comfortable.
Right, and there are other music students at Carthage who are from China. Are any of them people you already knew, or did you only meet them at Carthage?
Some of them are the same professor for us to study piano, so we have already known with each other, but the other, we just meet here.
Hmm. And say a word, if you would, about the gentleman next to you who is teaching you at Carthage and what your relationship is like or what he has taught you.
I think Dr. Well Farouk is a very patient enough professor, and he always encouraged me, although I do it not very that well. But he has more patience to me, and I'm very thankful and feel luckily that I have the professor like him during my 4 years college. Just like that.
That's good. That's nicely put. So as Dr. Farouk mentioned, you won Carthage's concerto competition. And for the sake of our listeners who don't understand, a concerto is some kind of piece with a soloist and an orchestra accompanying you. Mm-hmm. And so all of a range of talented young musicians auditioned, but you were the one who was chosen for this honor of playing with the Carthage Philharmonic Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And tell our listeners the music that you are going to be playing tomorrow night with the orchestra.
I would like to say that Chopin Concerto No. 2 is a lovely piece. It's because Chopin is fall in love and he wrote this piece. So I think it's a very romantic piece.
Mm.
I would like to invite all of you to come to here to hear the piece.
Mm. It is beautiful, and I actually was at the rehearsal yesterday and just recorded a few moments of your rehearsal with the orchestra, and I just thought it would be fun for our listeners to be able to hear just a little bit of this beautiful music and your beautiful playing. just a little hint of this Chopin piano concerto that Cixi Xu is going to be playing with Carthage's Philharmonic Orchestra. Because this is such romantic music, is it difficult to be together with the orchestra? I mean, as opposed to if this were Mozart or Bach and the pulse was steady, it would probably be simpler to stay together. Tell us how it has worked to do this with the orchestra and Maestro Kawakami, who is conducting. Does it feel like it's coming together well?
Well, first I want to thanks for Dr. Kawakami's patience, and he's a very good conductor who can catch the point that he came in and to do it together with me. So I want to thank you for him support or something. And then I think sometimes it's on time. I mean, the whole measure is, like, let's say the whole measure is one section, and then I can do some rubato in the measure, but next measure I have to on the downbeat. And then in some moment we have to see with each other and to see when we came in.
Right, so see, you actually try to look at each other and feel this. How many times have you performed with an orchestra before?
No.
Never?
This is my first time.
This is your first time. How exciting. And how exciting that first time can be with music as beautiful as this. Professor Farouk, did you choose this piece?
Well, I recommended this particular concerto because I thought it will fit her beautifully. And she seemed to have that twinkle in her eye after we listened to a couple of moments. And I would like to reiterate as well our thanks to Dr. Kawakami and the Philharmonic, who's doing a really fantastic job. It seems like there is a common misunderstanding with the Chopin concerti that the orchestral part are relatively plain and straightforward, and most of orchestras dread playing them. But I would have to say it is one of the most challenging concerti to follow the solos because of all of the rubatos, all of the bel canto ornaments that Chopin, as you very well know, he was very heavily influenced by the Italian bel canto composers, and he wanted to imitate that and succeeded for sure in capturing all of those runs and fiorituras and all of the
And the singing line that's
right.
Also part
so
of
it. So it is not easy at all to follow as well as Dr. Kawakami is doing and the orchestra. And it's a blessing and a curse in a way to have someone that sensitive and that musical who almost plays differently every time, as you should see, which is a little bit of a challenge for a conductor, but it's also a great learning experience.
Oh, of course.
To be able to work with wonderful musicians like that. And her working with a musical or with the opera workshop helped her realize more in a conductorial sense how to follow and to structure music, right?
Cixi Xu is going to be playing